What do Jews and Christians understand by the terms justice and social justice? What's the relationship between faith communities and justice? What drives faith-based organizations to serve justice? What is the individual's role, our role, in these enterprises? The Institute for Jewish-Christian Understanding at Muhlenberg College is going to explore these questions and more. We have a pair of fora coming up. Now, Peter, my two guests, by the way, this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, Dr. Peter Pettit and Rabbi Alan Judah. Peter, if I say fora instead of forums, am I just being snobby?
That's a possibility. It depends what circles you're in. If you expect your listeners to understand it, I think there's absolutely nothing snobby about it. If you anticipate you'll have to explain it, then you're making a different point.
We have a very sophisticated audience, you know, here at WDIY. I'm John Pierce, your host this evening, and our board operator is Neil Heaver, who is Director of Operations here at WDIY. Well, I'm delighted to have our two guests here to explore this, I think, a complicated issue of what is justice and how do you distribute it and what does faith have to do with it and so on. Dr. Peter Pettit is director of the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding and associate professor of religion studies at Muhlenberg College. He has been involved in Christian-Jewish dialogue for more than 30 years, giving leadership to the Council of Centers on Jewish-Christian Relations as its founding chair and contributing to research and dialogue programs of both the International Council of Christians and Jews and the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America's consultative panel on Lutheran-Jewish relations. At the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding, Peter leads a team of staff, students, and community volunteers in programs that advance understanding among Jews and Christians and, to a certain extent, Muslims. Peter is a pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America who served for 9 years at Hope Lutheran Church in Riverside, California, before coming to Muhlenberg College in 1999. Now, Peter, you gave up California for the Lehigh Valley. Is there a really good reason for that?
The Institute for Jewish Christian Understanding at Muhlenberg College. Actually, I was born in the Lehigh Valley. I was born at St. Luke's Hospital in Fountain Hill, and I grew up right outside Reading, did my college and seminary training here on the East Coast, but had the opportunity during that those years to taste a little bit of Southern California and went there to do my doctoral work in Claremont, California. Stayed on to serve Hope Lutheran Church in Riverside. But when Muhlenberg started the Institute, it was of keen interest to me. And a decade later, when the position as director came open and I became aware of that, I was happy to apply for it. And it's what brought us back to the East Coast.
Is this the only such institute that you know of on a college campus?
Not at all. The Council of Centers for Jewish-Christian Relations, which you mentioned, is a consortium of about 35 to 40 such centers on college campuses affiliated with various academic institutions, a couple that are standalone in their community. There's a large one in Baltimore, Maryland, the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies, which actually was standalone. It's now affiliated with Goucher College. But following Vatican II 50 years ago and the Roman Catholic statement Nos Raetate, in which the church reversed what Jules Isaac had called the teaching of contempt, the charge that the Jews killed Jesus and would suffer unto eternity as a result of that. Following Vatican II and the reversal of that teaching, the Catholic Church was quite intent on promulgating its new teachings in its seminaries and colleges. And so there's a pretty wide network of institutes and centers like this at Catholic colleges, particularly across the Northeast and the Midwest.
Interesting. And our other guest this evening is Rabbi Alan Judah, who was with the congregation B'rith Shalom in Bethlehem, and is now Rabbi Emeritus as of about a year and a half.
June 2014.
All right. He was has worked at St. Luke's University Health Network, the Lehigh Valley Hospital Network. We're now calling that Lehigh Valley Health Network, right? Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding, which we've just heard about from Dr. Peter Pettit, the Jewish Family Service of the Lehigh Valley. He was vice president, and he was on the Foundation Committee for Jewish Federation of the Lehigh Valley.
Just a small note. I didn't really work in the hospital networks. I've been part of the chaplaincy program, their board, for many years.
And you have written for the Globe Times, the Express Times, the Morning Call, as a religion columnist, and your education. Rabbi Judah attended and graduated from Columbia University with a Bachelor of Arts. And what was your major?
History. All right. Primarily American history.
Primarily. All right. And the Jewish Theological Seminary of America in New York, where you have a Bachelor of Hebrew Literature, Master of Arts, and Rabbinic Ordination in 1975. So welcome to you also. This is
thank you.
Not your first time here at WDIY, and Peter, not yours either.
That's correct.
That's correct.
So welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
Now, our topic this evening specifically is a pair of symposia called Journeys to Justice. I like that title. Did you come up with that, Peter?
We have a planning team that developed the title.
I don't recall. He's too modest to say.
I don't recall exactly where the specific words came from.
Journeys to Justice. So let's start off with a question. What is the central idea behind this program?
The idea to focus on justice during this program year of the Institute 2015-2016 emerged in many ways in response to the issues of justice that have dominated our headlines in the United States for the last year and a half, 2 years. And for some people, issues of justice that arose in the 1950s and 60s with the civil rights movement and have really never gone away. Those issues continue to be live and meaningful in the Lehigh Valley as across the United States, even in the years and the eras when things seem to be quieter. But they certainly have not been quiet for the last year and a half, 2 years. The Black Lives Matter movement, more recently the issues of immigration and refugee resettlement, a whole variety of questions about how does one build a society in which every individual and every group can feel that it is getting just treatment or finding its just place. So that's really what gave rise to the idea of working on the concept of justice this year. And then our program committee, as it worked with that, was aware of the fact that it's all too easy, particularly with an academic base like Muhlenberg, to sit on the campus and talk about things that are going on in the world. And so the journeys part of Journeys to Justice emerged from a commitment to get engaged, to find ways to explore how justice is actually being addressed in our local communities and region. Out of that, both learning and action components, we have developed this program.
And let's just mention right here that Journeys to Justice is comprised of a symposium on Wednesday, January 20th. So that is coming up next week. And then you're waiting until Tuesday, March 29th for the second one. And we'll get into the reason for that. So both of you were on the planning committee.
Well, I've worked with the planning committee most closely. Rabbi Judah has been drawn into the process because he will be one of the keynote speakers next Wednesday at the what we're calling the packing forum. We're using the journey metaphor. And so Rabbi Judah was involved in our mini course in the fall, which we described as planning for the journey. That was 4 weekday evening sessions studying the Jewish and Christian backgrounds to the notion of justice. This first forum, we're packing for the journeys. And then over the 2 months of February and March, we invite people to take journeys to justice by visiting and getting engaged with some of these programs around the valley. And then on March the 29th, that Tuesday evening forum at the end of March, we will invite people to come to unpack their journeys and engage in some dialogue and conversation about what they've seen, what they've learned, what it's caused them to reflect on.
And each of these forums will take place on the campus of Muhlenberg College.
Correct.
Moyer Hall.
Correct.
And Alan, what do you expect people to gain from the pair of forum?
Well, I think several different kinds of experiences. The first one perhaps could be characterized as a little bit more academic in terms of understanding from different faith traditions, certainly the Christian and Jewish, what the sources, the historical sources that would encourage people to engage in justice and different aspects of justice. I think a very important component is the second part, where people will have the opportunity to actually be involved with different agencies and organizations that engage in the day-to-day activities of justice. So the first part would be perhaps we could call theory, and then the second component would be practice. And I think certainly from both faith traditions' perspectives, the Jewish and the Christian, we would not want to see just the theory. It's not enough just to teach the sources, sacred sources as they may be, but the purpose is to engage and to really carry out justice in day-to-day life and in the details of it. So I think that's a very important aspect. And the opportunity, I would think, in the third part, to discuss what people experienced. While many people, of course, do volunteer in these varying agencies and organizations, some people probably, their main engagement may be in support in one fashion or another. To actually go visit agencies, engage in the activity, hopefully will give them something to contemplate. Hopefully they'll learn something from being in those agencies and potentially have an opportunity to discuss how can we improve the relationship between the community and the agencies and find ways to bring more justice to more people.
Very well said. This is a different approach to what I'm used to seeing with a set of symposium. Usually I figure I'll go and listen to some people who are very knowledgeable about whatever the subject is for 2 or 3 times, but I won't actually go out into the community. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of different.
It is. It's quite intentionally designed to be different in that way.
Right. And what are some of the agencies that who are going to cooperate with your outreach?
At this point, it looks like we'll have about 15 of them. And they range from the Caring Place, Child Services Center in downtown Allentown, to the Lehigh Valley Conference of Churches justice programs, the Lehigh Valley chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Jewish Family Service will be there with a number of its programs that focus on economic justice. Off the top of my head, I should have the list in front of me, I realize. It's really quite a wide spectrum. Here in Bethlehem, the soup kitchen from Trinity Episcopal Church will be there with their work for economic justice and also social services that they provide through the food soup kitchen. So it's really a pretty broad representation.
I'm impressed that you have as many as 15.
Lopoco will be there.
Let's get to a really what I think is a difficult question for Dr. Peter Pettit and for Rabbi Alan Judah. And that is, when we talk about justice, what is justice? How do we define it? Who wants to tackle that one first?
Well, let me begin by saying it's such a good question that I had the thought that I should Google the answer. And among the answers one can find, and if one looks in a dictionary as well, some of them are really just tautologies, you know, to be just, which I don't think really hits on much of an answer. One of the first Google sources actually brought seven different perspectives about justice, you know, which includes, of course, giving what we might consider fair rewards and punishments to people, doing what's morally correct. So there are, I think, you know, many different perspectives about what it is. And of course, I would say for better or worse, depending on people's perspective, they could view the same activity as being just or not just. It also probably depends on what system one is looking at justice. We have the judicial system, which has its, it might consider its own sacred tenets. For instance, in our American system, we have the presumption of innocence. That isn't universal. But of course, even having a presumption of innocence, I think if you were to poll American people on certain famous cases, you would find very quickly that among people there is no presumption of innocence. That's something that applies in a court of law. And of course, legal aspects of justice, how to conduct cases, how does one defend in a criminal case. So I think it's a very complex issue, and it's nice to say one is an advocate for justice, but again, it seems to have many different kinds of specific definitions.
It seems to me there are two different dimensions to the question of justice. The one is the substantive dimension of it, where you're asking, what does someone actually gain, or what is someone deserving of in a just society? So what is the substance? And those standards will differ in different societies. And ultimately, I don't think one can universalize the substantive question. That ultimately will be a matter of communal consensus. So if a particular community believes that what everyone deserves in order to have justice is equal opportunity, that's going to result in a different structure of a different set of justice structures than if one believes that everyone should have basically equal outcomes. But in any case, that substantive standard is one element of it. And in almost all justice language, equality or equity of those assets, whatever they are determined to be, is a goal. But then there's also a kind of procedural standard of justice, which is, are those standards and the means given to achieve the standard that is considered just applied consistently? So does everybody have equal access? Does everybody have the presumption of innocence? Or do only some people have the presumption of innocence? That would be seen as fundamentally unjust. Whether you agree with the presumption of innocence or not, we expect that if that's your standard, everybody has it applied. So it's both the substantive standard, and that will vary by community. But I think there's also is a fairly universal standard of consistent application.
We are talking about Journeys to Justice here on WDIY. It's Lehigh Valley Discourse. Dr. Peter Pettit and Rabbi Alan Judah will be back with me in just a minute.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Back to our topic of Journeys to Justice, which is a going to be held in two evenings at Muhlenberg College, this Wednesday, January 20th, and then Tuesday, March 29th. It's a symposium on each of those evenings. One of my guests this evening, Rabbi Judah, is going to be one of the keynote speakers. And let's give a shout out to Carol Chuck. I have not met Carol, but her husband, Joe, is one of my colleagues here at WDIY. He does Morning Edition, usually on Thursday mornings. And so they are, Carol and Alan are the two keynote speakers on the 20th.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
And then you're going to have some other panelists join.
Right. Carol has worked in the past for the Allentown Diocese, Roman Catholic Church, in Christian initiation programs. And so she has very strong background in education and community programming. And we're excited to have her pairing with Rabbi Judah as the keynoters. Also, both of them were involved in our planning for the journey in the mini course in the fall. And so we had other instructors for that course. And so they'll be bringing some of the input from the learning that we did there in the fall. On Wednesday evening, January 20th, they will be our keynoters, and we'll have four individuals who are involved locally in justice work who will respond to the keynote and reflect on their own motivations for being involved in justice work. Nancy Tate from Lopoco is one of those. Mary Griffin from The Caring Place. Larry Pickens from the Lehigh County Conference of Churches, and Judge Kelly Bannock from the Court of Common Pleas of Lehigh County. Part of the emphasis that we want to lift up is that this is not just about learning about the work, and it's not just about learning about the need, but as an Institute for Jewish Christian Understanding, we are invested in helping people come to a deeper and more appreciative realization of why one's religious identity moves an individual to get involved in working for justice. And those reasons can be different for Jews and Christians and Muslims and people of no particular religion or Buddhism or whatever their religious worldview might be and their religious commitments. So while it is essential to the program that people are engaged with the actual work of justice, our focus is really on empowering the dialogue in which they have the opportunity to speak with others about what their motivations are and to help them reflect through that dialogue on what their own grounding for justice might be.
And I take it that the forum on January 20th and also on March 29th, you're inviting people who are not churched.
Absolutely.
As well as you don't – it sounds almost as if, well, it's the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding that you'd be a Jew or a Christian to attend this, but not so.
Not so at all, because we recognize, first of all, that Judaism and Christianity in their respective ways, and they are different – but both have contributed to the construction of our modern liberal democracies, which are more secularized. And so even for people who don't affiliate with or identify with either the Jewish or Christian religious tradition, there are aspects of Jewish and Christian approaches to justice which have informed what we think of as secular structures and secular understandings. More importantly, Jews and Christians in this valley interact with many, many more people than just other Jews and Christians. We interact with Muslims. We interact with Buddhists. We interact with seculars. We interact with the Lenni Lenape. I mean, there's a whole diversity of ethical and religious worldviews represented here in the valley. And if we're going to talk about justice and try to understand people's motivations, while our focus will be on providing resources from Judaism and Christianity, the dialogue is wide open to anyone.
And we have mentioned the date of January 20th, which is this Wednesday, and that's at 7 p.m.
That's correct.
At Muhlenberg College, Moyer Hall.
Moyer Hall, the more modern academic building right next to the big collegiate Gothic chapel.
Right.
Chu Street.
Easy to identify. For folks who would like to have more information from the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding, the phone number to call is 484-664-3470, or you can go online, ijcu.org,
correct,
and get any information that you might want. You also work with another of my colleagues, Marcy Lightwood.
I do indeed.
And so she does Morning Edition here on a Monday.
Yeah. Marcy came on board with us about a year and a half ago, if I remember correctly, a year and a half or 2 years ago, as the school's program coordinator. And she works quite extensively with middle schools and high schools in the area in a program we call Reducing Hatred, Youth and Prejudice, Reducing Hatred. And so it has its own dimension of interpersonal justice that we work on with school students from across the region. Marcy's been a terrific addition to that program, carrying on a strong legacy that was started 20-plus years ago.
Well, I'm indebted to her because she was my trainer when I began here at WDIY.
How about that?
Yes, and she was a wonderful trainer, and I've grown to know through the years that she's very involved in the community, too, and in issues of justice. Alan, I'd like to probe this question a little bit about the understanding that Jews have and that Christians have of justice. How does each religious community understand it? Maybe you take the Jewish point of view first.
That's a good choice for me.
It was just a stab in the dark.
Again, the Jewish community doesn't speak with one voice, so I should say that up front. So I'm going to speak from my own perspective. From my perspective of Judaism, I think that the sacred texts help us to understand what we perceive God to require of us in terms of justice. That begins with, but surely doesn't end, with the Torah, the five books of Moses in the Bible. But as I see it, although that's the origin point, it's refracted over the centuries through other sacred texts, which we refer to as Midrash, interpretive text, Talmud, which is discussions. It's often thought of as a code of law, but really isn't. They're discussions. And then followed by, again, centuries of codes of law, and right through to our day in what we call responsa literature, where people over the centuries would ask prominent rabbis, or in our world perhaps more so committees of rabbis and scholars, about issues that were pressing in their time and what did Jewish tradition have to say about them. So while the, again, origin point of how we would view issues of justice begins with the five books of Moses, I think our tradition has evolved, as I think traditions need to do, and our understanding is increased with time, with what we might consider secular knowledge, general knowledge, interchange with other peoples and other traditions, varying countries. And so justice is not fixed for all time at one point, particularly social justice, I would say, but continues to expand as we have new experiences. Even if one just thinks about issues in the medical world, you know, I've been part of a forum where we've had a discussions, you know, what do you do about things like morphine drips? Obviously, that's not something that was discussed 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. But we can go back to sacred texts that can talk about the value of human life and preserving human life. What does it mean if you hasten death or you allow it to occur naturally? So while the details may vary from generation to generation and certainly from century to century, certain basic aspects of justice, I think, remain age after age. And that's how we continue to look back, but recognize that changes occur.
Very interesting. And how about from the Christian point of view? Again, this is too broad a question for you to be speaking for all Christians, right, Peter?
Yeah, sometimes I'm not sure I can even speak entirely clearly for myself. And it is. One of the things that we learned in our study in the fall was that there's a very strong formulated position within Roman Catholic theology about social justice. And there are, if I remember correctly, Alan, you may remember, I think there were 9 themes of social justice that were presented as central to contemporary Roman Catholic thought. And again, the kinds of sources that Alan was speaking about in Judaism are in many ways reflected within Christian and Roman Catholic practice. That's not to distinguish those, but Roman Catholic and other Christian practice. So that scripture certainly, tradition certainly, the human knowledge and wisdom certainly as a source. I think one of the things that's interesting about a Christian consideration of justice is that because of the way that the God of Israel was introduced to non-Jews in antiquity, back when Christianity was getting started, Christianity essentially developed from the proclaiming of the God of Israel to people who were not genetically or historically or culturally from the people Israel. And the figure of Jesus became the central figure in articulating how it was that what God was doing with Israel now became significant for the rest of the world. But because of the particular way that that happened, the whole issue of human sinfulness became central to Christian self-understanding. And so justice in Christianity in many ways gets tied in with how an individual is justified before God, having sinned and broken what is given as God's commandments or will for human life. How does an individual get justified or set right, rectified with God? And in Christian theology, that is always done from God's side primarily. So the establishment of the reestablishment of the just relationship between God and the human being is always initiated by the more powerful, in this case, divine party. And I think one of the things that does for Christianity is to put an emphasis on looking at those who are most marginal, who are weakest, who are least advantaged in a society, and asking how do those, if we're going to imitate God, imitatio Dei in the Latin phrase, how do those who have more resources, greater power, etc., work in order to restore a just relationship with those who have less? And so in the liberation theologies of the 1980s and 90s and to this day, one of the themes is that God has a preferential option for the poor. Now, in Judaism, as I understand it, that actually goes against one of the fundamental principles of justice, which is you will not pervert justice, either bending it toward the poor or bending it toward the wealthy. That the more powerful and the less powerful, the more wealthy, the less wealthy, the more advantaged, the disadvantaged. There's no principled preference for either of those in Judaism, if I'm right, Alan.
And that's very specifically in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 15. It talks about not rendering an unfair decision, neither favoring the poor or showing deference to the rich.
Right.
Everyone should be treated equally.
But isn't there also scripture in the Hebrew Bible about taking care of widows and orphans?
Not only is there a passage, but taking care of widows, the orphans, and the stranger is mentioned 36 times in the five books of Moses, more than any other topic. Well, if one wants to think of the Sabbath as certainly being a topic that's mentioned several times, nothing is mentioned more than taking care of the weakest members of society.
Which seems to contradict what you're saying about the about Judaism not wanting to skew justice toward one end or
I think,
other.
Again, now these are different aspects of justice. I think not skewing it is more so when you come to a court of law. When you're standing in front of a magistrate or a judge, the judge is not to show favoritism. But when it talks about taking care of the weakest members of society, then that's a very fundamental aspect of our tradition that we have a responsibility. And, you know, I would characterize it's not an option. It's in Hebrew, the word I would say would be tzedakah, which comes from righteousness. It's a responsibility, unlike charity, which comes from the Latin caritas, which is an act of love. So we have a responsibility to take care of the weakest members of society, and I think that's just as true today as it has been throughout history.
This is a fascinating point that I learned in some ways in a particularly sharp way from Alan Jennings, the executive director of the Community Action Council in the Lehigh Valley. We just honored Alan with our Wallenberg tribute in the fall of 2015, in line with our emphasis on justice throughout this whole program year. And one of the things that Alan has said is, in talking about this distinction between what is just and what is the social obligation to those who are most marginal or disadvantaged, what Alan says is that charity or good works, you know, social programs, are what you do when you don't have justice. So, in one sense, if we live in a just society and things are distributed according to whatever the communal standards are, if they are distributed equally, then the need for charity or tzedakah, the obligation to assist those who are marginalized or disadvantaged, is lessened. And to the extent that there is not justice in society, the need for social programs to reach out to those who are disadvantaged is much greater.
And we're always going to have that need, right? Well, throughout history.
That need, you know, one of the verses that has always struck me in the five books of Moses is in Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 11. For there never will cease to be needy ones in your land, which is why I, God, command you, open your hand to the poor and needy kinsmen in your land. Much as we might work and need to work and strive for justice on many levels, including, of course, economic justice, it seems to be almost a divine revelation that eventually, and maybe at all times, there'll be some people who are in need.
And that's from the book of?
Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy.
And within the Christian Gospels, we also have the saying of Jesus, when a woman wanted to anoint him with a jar of very costly ointment, and one of the disciples protested that the ointment could be sold for much money and given to the poor, and Jesus says, "The poor you will have with you always." So again, the perspective that perfect justice cannot eliminate inequality, perfect justice probably cannot be achieved.
Yes, indeed, unfortunately. Well, it's time for us to take another break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY Allentown. I'm John Pierce, your host, and we will be back in 60 seconds.
Unlimited possibilities, folk music from across the Atlantic to the Lehigh Valley. Songs from this country's roots to the songs of today.
Oh, baby, I'm getting ready.
The Carter family to Joan Baez, Patty Griffin to John Gorka. There's always a great variety on Unlimited Possibilities. Friday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY Allentown.
My guests this evening are Dr. Peter Pettit and Rabbi Alan Judah. Dr. Pettit is the director of the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding at Muhlenberg College. And Peter, you've been doing that for about 16 years.
Yes, it has been.
Mm-hmm. And Rabbi Judah is Rabbi Emeritus as of a year and a half ago.
After 39 and a half years at Congregation Brith Shalom.
39 and a half years. It sounds like a career.
Well, it was. From ordination to retirement.
Wow, wonderful. Let's get back to the topic of justice by asking the question, is there a difference between justice and social benefit programs? Peter, what do you do with that one?
Mostly what I do with that one is debate it with the other members of our planning team. Just about every meeting we had, it seems, we talked about whether we want to draw that line, whether we can draw that line. I just want to recognize the people who've been involved in planning this program. You mentioned Joe Chuck, your colleague from here at WDIY, and his wife, Carol Chuck, who will be one of our keynoters next Wednesday, January 20th at 7 o'clock at Muhlenberg. Joining us on the planning team were other members of the Institute for Jewish Christian Understanding board, Carol Shiner Wilson, retired Dean of Academic Life at Muhlenberg College, and Professor Alice Eckhart, retired from the Religion Studies program at Lehigh University. Also, the former executive director of the Lehigh County Conference of Churches, Bill Seaman, a UCC pastor, and cantor Kevin Wartell, the second longest serving Jewish clergy member in the Lehigh Valley following Rabbi Judah. Kevin's been around, what, about 27, 28 years, something
like that. Along those lines, yes.
Sarah Shrum, who has worked with us at the Institute quite extensively. She's a member of Trinity Lutheran Church in Reading, Pennsylvania. And so when we would gather for our meetings to talk about this program, we regularly asked the question or stumbled across the question about justice and social benefit programs. And again, I think Alan Jennings' statement that social programs are what you have to do when a society does not have justice is a helpful insight to that. In many ways, justice work could be understood as trying to address the structures of society so that when society is operating on its typical day-to-day basis, goods and opportunities and assets are distributed equally, equitably across the society, and that social programming is what we do when those day-to-day mechanisms do not distribute equally and we find that some people are in serious need. And then to restore a measure of justice to them, whether it's even – it's not just economic justice. It's also the justice of personal dignity. It's the justice of fair access to resources that are commonly held by society. And so the social programming is really what we need to do when the structures of justice are not doing it naturally on a day-to-day basis.
Anything to add to that?
Well, it just occurred to me that part of Jewish tradition is that even the poor need to give something in terms of tzedakah, of reaching out and helping others. These are great concepts. And if people, I think, carefully examined certainly religious traditions of all kinds, they would find a certain sense of a mandate to reach out and help. But obviously, as a society and a world society, a global society, we have not achieved that ideal. And if one didn't have some structures in place to reach out and help others, then the problems would be even more severe than they are. So there are great concepts that we have about justice in varying forms, but enacting them, which depends in many instances on individual free will to do so, creates limitations, realistic limitations.
We have been talking this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse about Journeys to Justice. And it's actually, I see it as a three-legged stool where you're going to have a forum this Wednesday on January 20th.
Correct.
And then you're going to have a period of time, a couple of months, until the second forum, which is on March 29th. And in between those, the third leg of the stool is taking people out into the community and getting a little sense of how to act on justice in the community. Right. And you've mentioned, Peter, before some of the organizations that are cooperating. What are the people participating in these two fora actually going to do when they go out to agencies
Sure.
in the community?
Well, that will depend entirely on what the agency sees as helpful and reasonable. Before I go into more specifics on that, let me clarify something about this first forum next Wednesday. We're doing a lot of talking about justice and its ideas and its grounding in Judaism and Christianity and the like. And there will, in fact, be about a half an hour of a presentation on those ideas by our keynote speakers, Rabbi Judah and Carol Chuck. And then there will be about another half hour of reflection on personal motivations, personal engagement by these four other panelists who will be responding to the keynote. But in some ways, the real focus of this forum, once we've primed the pump of reflection, so to speak, but the very practical dimension of this forum is that these 12 to 15 organizations that will be participating with us will be there at Muhlenberg College in Moyer Hall with displays, with representatives, and with specific opportunities that participants will have to engage with their justice work over that two-month period of February and March. A good half of the purpose of this first forum is for people to go around to these what we're calling portals to justice, the opportunities that they'll have, and to talk to the folks who are leading those groups and make decisions about which one or ones the individual participant might choose to engage over these 2 months.
And I would imagine also that many people don't realize how many different agencies and organizations exist in the Lehigh Valley.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's very true. And when I say engage with them over the 2 months, that's not a continuous engagement. In most cases, this will be, you know, go for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, on a particular day. And at the soup kitchen at Trinity, it might be working on the food on the lunch line and serving food, but also talking to the people who staff that and who work that regularly to understand why are you here and help me as a participant reflect on why am I here? Why might I do this? Turning Point of the Lehigh Valley, which deals with domestic violence, or VAST, which works against sex trafficking. In those cases, the confidentiality and the safety of the beneficiaries of the program are paramount. And so participants in those cases will not interact with the actual doings of the program, but the staff of the program will have scheduled times when people can come and speak with them and learn more about what's going on in those programs, talking with people who are already volunteering in those programs. So it really varies quite a bit depending on the nature of the organization. Monocacy Farms up here off 512 and Makeda Road is participating with us. And we're not in the farming season, but the opportunity to go and to see how that community agriculture model operates will be one of the opportunities. And it's quite varied because we have, as Alan says, we have such a diversity and a richness of organizations that are that are doing this work.
And yes. I think the Farm Project is a good example where there would be an opportunity to volunteer and hopefully grow food in the coming planting season. And part of the project is to distribute that food to varying agencies that then serve food pantries and soup kitchens. So there's an interrelationship among and between some of the agencies that people might also not realize how they work hand in hand to enhance life for people.
Right. Some of our listeners may have seen an article in the Morning Call, which came out on December 22nd past. And the headline is Justice to be Topic of Muhlenberg Forums. And that's what we're talking about this evening. Institute for Jewish Christian Understanding hopes to give the public a better idea of movements in the region. Now, front and right in the middle of this article, Peter, is a wonderful picture of you. I'm just wondering if your mother would say, oh, he's much more handsome than that.
I've actually had a number of responses from friends and colleagues about that photograph, and I think the one I most appreciated came from a Jewish friend who asked, is that your bar mitzvah picture?
Good enough. Well, in the article, and now I'm going to quote, we're interested not only in how do you do justice, but why do you do justice? There aren't necessarily the same motivations in religious communities or secular communities. We can all end up in the same march or on the same picket line, but what takes us there? And that is a quote from you, Peter.
Right.
So I think a lot of times we realize that, yes, there should be good works being done out there because there are people who are disadvantaged, and we don't go the extra step of saying, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. What do you think about the statement that there is no such thing as altruism? Because if I do something like deliver Meals on Wheels or serve food at a food pantry, it makes me feel good. So it's not that I'm being such a terrific person, but I'm also giving something to myself. Fair enough?
Absolutely fair enough. But you're also talking to a Lutheran. And one of the central tenets of Lutheran theology is that there is no pure act in anyone's repertoire, that everything that we do is a mixed bag of good and, frankly, evil, of altruism and self-interest. And that, in fact, one of Martin Luther's core points was that it's when we believe we are doing something righteous, religiously proper, that we actually fall into the greatest danger of serving our own interests or harming others because of the righteousness of what it is that we're doing. So pure altruism, I think, may very well be an ideal or an illusion that that nobody can actually reach. I would suggest, though, that the fact that we can't have the ultimate doesn't mean that we can't talk about how we can be more altruistic or how we can. It's not so much, I'm not sure it's altruism. I think it really, if we go back to the notion of justice, it really comes down to the question of how can we ensure that what our collective society affords is available to and shared by all people within that society equitably. That's not altruistic in a sense, but it does ask me to examine my own position in the world and to ask both in terms of the structures I participate in and in terms of my individual actions. Is what I'm doing part of ensuring that we all are equitably resourced? Or is what I'm doing part of creating an imbalance in those things?
I think from the people who suffer from a lack of justice, the altruism of a potential donor of whatever kind may not be that significant. If you're hungry and you need food, whether someone is giving it to you because they want to do, in quote, the right thing, or they're getting a great tax break, or has some other reason may not matter. When you're hungry, you would like to eat. If you're homeless and it's a bitterly cold night, you probably want shelter. And whoever is providing the food or the shelter, for whatever reasons they're doing, and I don't know that we've even discussed, I think sometimes people may be engaged out of personal history. So I know I take cognizance in my own life, my parents, my grandparents, my in-laws, and many other relatives were in varying ways, from survivors to those murdered victims of the Holocaust. So I recognize that in part when I try to speak out against prejudice of whatever kind, that's part of the reason why I do it. If there are people who grew up in great poverty and then reach great financial success, if they say, I can recall what it was like and therefore I am going to set up a foundation or distribute significant money on a regular basis, that personal aspect may be very significant in that decision. It may also in part be influenced by their religious tradition or other factors. So there are many reasons I suspect why people do engage. And if it isn't 100% altruistic, I'm not sure necessarily that needs to be a goal.
And this was Rabbi Alan Judah speaking and Dr. Peter Pettit. Peter, you wanted to say something?
I just wanted to respond to what Alan said, because part of what he raises has been pointed out also by psychologists, that the degree to which we are able to empathize with people who are in a different circumstance than we are, which after all, if I'm trying to assess whether things are fairly distributed, understanding what somebody's own view of their position is a crucial part of that. And psychologists tell us that one of the significant dimensions of being able to empathize is actually being able to imagine ourselves in their position. So when Alan talks about the person who rose from poverty to a measure of wealth that allows them to make choices, it's going to be reasonably easy for that person to identify with, to get into the mental life of the disadvantaged person that they want to help. For those who don't have that experience or who have not experienced the kind of prejudice that Jews in the Shoah did or that black people growing up in America do, the capacity to enter the mental world, to mentalize the experience of those people is much more of a challenge. And so hopefully we'll give people some opportunities perhaps to do that as well.
Peter and Alan, thank you so much for joining me this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Just a note to our listeners, if you want more information about the Institute for Jewish and Christian Understanding, the number to call, 484-664-3470, or online, ijcu.org. Remember, until we meet again, to be gentle with your neighbor.